Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to Troy and Michael Speak Live, a show dedicated to exploring the tools needed for understanding, nurturing, and building our personal worlds. The channeling and the teachings shared here are based in what is known as the Michael Teachings, as taught by the entity we've come to refer to as Michael, speaking through various channels from around the world. For more information and a quick introduction to the teachings, please see truthloveenergy.com. I'm Troy, your host and resident Michael Channel, and on today's show our panel discusses fear, the part of us we develop as a form of protection from the things in life we have deemed are threatening. Sometimes fear is useful, but sometimes it's just damn nasty.
How bad it may seem, we're heading into a dream. Obscurity's on our scene, we're heading into a tunnel. How bad it may seem, we're heading into our dream. Longing for the unseen, we're heading into a dream.
Today we are going to explore the seven basic fears known as chief negative features in the Michael Teachings that all of us tend to use at some point or another in our lives. We'll be sharing our insights and our experiences, as well as bringing in Michael to the discussion for the panel to delve deeper. Hey, enjoy the show!
That we've kind of promoted so that others might participate and call in, and I'm really nervous and I'm very excited. This is one of those things where it doesn't matter how anxious and nervous I am, I just kind of walk through it and try to trust myself along the way. I mean, the worst that could happen is that I really screw up and press the wrong button, or I can't get into trance, or no one finds this the least bit interesting and it's all a bust. But then really, even that worst-case scenario isn't all that bad, right? So I think it's fitting then that we start off the series with an episode on fear. And I wanted to explore this topic for a couple of reasons. One is that, according to Michael, the months of October, November, and December are months that tend to emphasize our exploration of our fears as we review our year. And just looking back over what we've experienced and prepare for the next year and sort of assess all of our goals and our relationships. And this happens on an obvious level for a lot of people, but for some it shows up more creatively, hidden in our reactions or in our interpretation of world events or just an underlying or an overall mood. And it's been said that suicides rise during this season, and if that's true, I wonder if this seasonal exploration of our fears is sort of in contrast to all the cheer and delights that we're encouraged to feel during the holidays. I wonder if that's sort of too much for some people to handle. And that's not a really great, exciting note to start the show on, but I have been thinking about that. And the other reason I find it appropriate to explore this is, as our first episode, is because I started having my own fears come up as I neared the broadcast of the show, and my God, especially during that five-second countdown to our going live, talk about nerve-wracking. So rather than trying to overcome or fight the fear, I decided it might be just helpful to talk about it. So we're going to get into it and explore it together, and we've all been there. So let's see if we can shed light today on not only fear, but what specific fears we might have and how they affect us and what we can do to transform them. The interesting thing about Michael's take on fear is that it isn't something one needs to fight or avoid, but more something to pay attention to and to transform as necessary. Most of us think of fear as something we shouldn't have, But it's not so much that we shouldn't have it, but that we can learn to understand it and use it appropriately. And according to Michael, fear is more like a friend. It's a protector, someone whose only duty is to protect you. And as we grow in this life, we're taught or we decide that certain things in life are threatening, and we develop strategies to protect ourselves from these experiences. And there are many things in life that our fears can come in handy for, especially when we really are threatened or in danger. But for the most part, we aren't in danger or in need of protection, but our fear really can't differentiate between what's real and what's imagined. So we end up behaving fearfully in very inappropriate areas of our lives. And the key to transforming fear that's inappropriate is probably the best through consciousness, through our awareness of ourselves in those moments and making a choice from that place instead of from a place of fear. And I think this will help. If you think of fear as sort of like a very, very loyal dog, we've taught to bark at the first signs of danger, but that eventually we've taught him that every instance of sound coming from the other side of the door is a threat. We're the ones who taught our dog to protect us, so it's also our responsibility to teach him what is genuinely a threat and what is not. So do we lock ourselves inside forever just because the dog keeps barking? Or do we look out the window and even sometimes open the door and validate whether what we fear is real or just our imagination? Oh, and for those of you who aren't dog people, just insert your vicious cat or your bitchy bird into that previous analogy. So let's get right into the basics of what Michael offers as insight into fear before introducing our panel today for our discussion. In the Michael teachings, fear is described by being broken down into seven basic fears. Michael calls these chief negative features. They call them that because there's nothing really positive about them, at least in their use of the word positive. No matter how little or how powerfully these fears are used in your life, they will always be bringing about some form of limitation, and they always tend to emphasize a separation of you from your world in some way. These seven chief negative features or fears are usually chosen by the time you reach your teens, and from there they become a habit. You usually choose two fears or two experiences or areas in your life that you feel you're in need from protection from. There is the primary fear and the secondary fear. The primary affects and it challenges your attaining of your goals in life, therefore affecting more of your personal experiences relating to accomplishments, intentions, efforts. And the secondary chief negative feature or fear affects and challenges your relationships and your intimacy issues. So the chief negative features by name are self-deprecation. And this is the fear of inadequacy. It's your not being able to live up to your own or someone else's standards, leaving you feeling weak and insecure, maybe even incompetent. And basically, it's the fear of not being enough. Arrogance is the fear of vulnerability, wanting others to live up to your standards or fearing your standards are not counting to other people, or leaving you vulnerable. This leaves you vulnerable, judgmental, isolated, and alone, as you are seen as not needing others. And this is pretty much the fear of being too much. Then there's self-destruction, which is the fear of worthlessness, feeling that you have no worth or value unless you're dead or dying for someone else. And this leaves you with ongoing sacrifices for others with no gain really for anyone, even extending into getting terminal diseases. This is the fear of getting too much in life. And then there's greed. That's the fear of scarcity, feeling that you won't get all that is out there of worth to you personally, leaving you fixated on one or two things that you just can't satisfy as a way of maintaining your sense of self. And this can be food, affection, sex, money, or even vague things like not enough love. It's the fear of not getting enough. Then there's martyrdom. That's the fear of losing control, a strong need for being in control of everything in your space, even though that's impossible. And this leaves the person feeling victimized, burdened, and complaining, Basically, this is the fear of losing control of space. Then there's impatience. This is the fear of missing out. The person's always fighting the clock, trying to control before being controlled, and this leaves them intolerant and agitated a lot of the times. This is basically the fear of losing control of time. And then there's stubbornness. This is the fear of change. This person cannot and will not deal with anything new and against their already set opinions, ideas, and their environment that they recognize. Some people who have stubbornness actually can appear like they are adventurous and changeable, but if you look closely enough, you'll see they're actually sort of creating the more things change, the more they stay the same kind of scenario. And constant change can just be a way of avoiding dealing with actual changes. So this is basically the fear of anything different. So without any further delay, let's get the panel involved here and see what everyone has to say about their experiences with fear. And about 45 minutes into the show, if you are tuned in and you're listening, you can call in and I will have gone into trance by then, and you can ask Michael directly about your personal issues regarding fear. Or so get your fingers ready to dial, and the number is 646-652-4762. That's 646-652-4762. So now let's bring on the panel. Hello, everybody. Are you guys on here?
I'm here.
So, Cypress, you can introduce yourself first.
Hi, my name is Cypress Blue. And do you want us to say role or anything?
Yeah, you can say your role. Your
I'm podcast. A Sage from Cadre 1, Entity 2.
And Sandy?
Hi, this is Sandy Stevens. I am a ScholarCast Sage from Cadre 2, Entity 2.
And Matthew is here, too?
No, I'm here. This is Matthew Spears. I'm a ScholarCast Sage from 2-4.
And is Karen on here?
Karen isn't on here, no.
Oh, okay. No. You're looking forward to her possibly participating, too.
Yeah, get an artisan instead of all sages.
I was just going to say it's a very sagey discussion.
I know. It should be really fun. Well, I guess we'll just dive right into some of the questions that I had sent you guys and let you first share what you have identified as your chief negative features and if you've identified the primary and secondary ones. Whoever wants to go first, you can just dive in.
Okay, this is Sandy. My primary is arrogance. My secondary is self-deprecation. And they were very easily validated when I had them channeled. Instantly recognizable.
Oh, okay. And Cypress?
My primary is impatience, and my secondary is martyrdom. I might have it backwards.
I think you have it right.
No, yeah, I think of it right. And, yeah, mine were pretty easily validated as well. And what I like is I've seen progression in it since I've known about them for a very long time. They used to run my life a lot more than they do. But I have noticed over time they also get sneakier and sneakier.
Yeah, they do.
once you start to get a handle on a certain aspect of it, it just gets extra tricky.
Yeah. And Matthew?
My primary is impatience and my secondary is greed, so two cardinal chief features.
Ooh.
Greed actually wasn't channeled. I just got impatience in my original chart, but Karen actually recently said, you know, probably greed, and I validated it. So it's had its effect on my life, certainly, in a lot of ways. You know, impatience always doesn't want you to be here present, just not relaxed, not having fun. Always something to do.
That's yeah.
Mine doesn't really come out that way.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. So the next question would be, do you see how, as far as Michael differentiates your primary and your secondary, do you see how your primary affects your life and in the Michael system, your goal, and the secondary affects your relationships and your experience of intimacy? Have you guys seen it play out really obviously in those areas?
Definitely.
Yeah, I think so.
Not particularly on my side.
Oh, really? How do you see yours?
I see it more affecting a lot of different things. So impatience definitely affects relationships in terms of frustration. I mean, keep in mind my goal is flow, so that will affect my experience in every moment because it's a neutral goal just reacting.
Yeah.
Flowing with the moment. So impatience pretty much shows up in every moment. It's not just when I'm, you know, going for growth or something.
Yeah, I see mine definitely showing up in those specific areas because when I'm dealing with the world or what I consider the world, I can see my arrogance kick in tremendously. That's where I feel vulnerable. It's where I'm more judgmental. It's where I fear being judged the most. It's where I fear being seen too closely. But when I get into an intimate relationship, it completely turns the other way around where I want to be seen more. I want to be embraced more for who I am. And I really start to feel inadequate, and I start to feel like I'm not living up to, you know, someone else's standards. And I start second-guessing and doubting. And self-deprecation is so painful in those circumstances. But I don't have that in my regular, like, day-to-day world. I have a totally different experience with my arrogance. Do you, for those of you who experience it so clearly like that, do you find that your secondary doesn't really show up until you get into a relationship where you're dealing with someone one-on-one?
It definitely shows up in more of my intimate circle of friends, and they're the ones that see that, you know, where I'm less controlling but more... I end up playing the victim a lot more. People who know me from, you know, work or socializing, I try to control those situations more. I don't try to control my intimate relationships as much, but I feel affected more by them. I'm much more victimized by my intimate relationships. I play the victim more. And people who know me from work could never even imagine that aspect of me.
That's true. Just knowing you all these years, it's so strange that your work life, your work outside, is so different from what we experience as close friends.
Right.
I've seen that too.
They wouldn't even think I was the same person.
Yeah, I become two different people too, and to a certain extent, it's not really two different people, but it's definitely
right.
Another side.
And they just can't imagine the person that they see having these certain issues, you know, or being victimized, because I don't accept that in that aspect of my life at all.
And also I was wondering if the secondary for some of us shows up more as a level of us that we tend to reveal as we get to know people instead of it being something we present to them. Like the primary might be the one that we don't care if people see, or we can't really hide it, but the secondary ends up being revealed more.
That's a good point.
As we get to know people. And Sandy?
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I was just thinking about it as you were saying it, and it makes perfect sense. I don't know if anybody really that isn't, you know, part of the teachings would see the arrogance, because I think that people that haven't learned anything about the Michael teachings don't recognize some of the hallmarks of arrogance. But I think that the self-dep, whether or not people see it, everybody who is close to me is affected by it.
Affected by it is a good point, because that's true. People are so, in your intimate relationships, they're very affected by your chief negative feature.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point, too, yeah, because the arrogance thing is something sort of detached. Well, my primary seems to be something more able to be detached from, like, whether people are affected by it or not isn't something I'm really pay too much attention to or really get feedback about. And when I do, I already have arrogance, so it's easy to start to blow it off. But the self-deprecation, I hear that more than I never hear about the arrogance thing except for people who don't really know me. And then the people who do know me are constantly commenting on the self-deprecation and calling me out on it.
It is annoying.
And Matthew, I haven't heard from you in a while. Do you want to chime in a little bit before we move on to the next question?
We can move on.
No, okay. Well, we kind of covered the next question, which is what's one of the most obvious ways you've seen your chief negative features show up for you? But we can ask that just in case there is something you want to give as an example. So what's one of the most obvious ways, like a pattern you've seen, that your fear shows up for you?
Well, I'll go first. I have the most obvious way that it shows up and easiest for me to recognize is in my fear of social situations. If I'm going to be in a large group setting, it's just incredibly difficult for me to believe that everybody in the place is not focused on me and whatever I may or may not be doing, which just makes me want to stay home.
Yeah.
That's the end of your fun.
As my first.
Well, for me, like, it's taking the same example of social situation, having a group of people over to my house, sometimes is very daunting for me because I feel like I have to try to control what everybody is doing, which is totally ridiculous. And I know it's ridiculous consciously, and I have to make this big effort, and I'm really usually okay unless somebody gets a little out of hand or something, and then it's like the iron fist, you know? Stop.
Yes, I know. I've experienced quite a bit.
It's ridiculous when it's hysterical when you look at it, but in the moment sometimes I'm so overwhelmed by this multitude. It's like herding cats, you know? I mean, you're just trying to, you cannot, it's just not even possible to do, but it doesn't stop me at all from attempting it.
Hey, Matthew, what's one of your most obvious ways?
Well, let's see. There's obvious to other people, and there's obvious to myself.
Oh,
when I'm experiencing impatience, a lot of the time it's when there's something, you know, that really bothers me that I don't fully want to get into. And that's really the other side of chief features, which is it isn't this evil demon taking control of you. It's an actual defense.
Yeah, definitely.
Something you think are threatening. So, you know, I've had abuse in my past, and I know that any time any of it comes up, I feel really frustrated and impatient, like I have to do something. And a lot of times, like, if any anger is coming up, it's more impatient. It's more of, hey, I should be through this. I should be, you know, fixed. I should be healed. This is not fine, being where I am.
Yeah.
So that's the side of chief features, which are more a defense, and it's about really acknowledging, hey, you know, it is a defense, and maybe it's not useful anymore.
Yeah, and so that's that I understand as being the side that's most obvious to you. What's the one that you think is more obvious to other people?
Well, the other side of patience is, you know, being a bit brash at times and saying, hey, we're going to do this. And, you know, I have no problem getting in front of people and potentially annoying people with that. I don't mind people calling me out and saying, no way. But certainly like, the positive pole is audacity, and certainly that shows up. We're saying, you know, let's move on. So, you know, getting a bit pushy.
Yeah. Now, the next question is, what's one of the most discreet or insidious ways that you've caught your chief negative feature showing up for you? Like, how does it just sneak in there? And all of a sudden, you're like, what the hell? You don't realize that you're doing it. And it's surprising when you do realize it. Have you had that experience, anybody?
Well, I think for me, again, it goes like the other one is more social, but for, you know, patience and martyrdom work so well in tandem because you want to control the close little things and the big things. It's all really about control of time, space, whatever. And when you try to control, you know, a group of people or this or that, it's more obvious and quite often more comical. But when you try to control the people that are intimate in your life, your close friends, where they might be making a choice that you don't agree with, and I really sometimes catch myself going to what I would consider extremes to manipulate a situation. And I've been quite a lot better at this, but it used to be really severe, where I would really try to control someone who's supposed to be so close to me, you know, and I'm supposed to be so, intimate friends with, but yet I'm still trying to manipulate their choices, which is so horrible seeming.
Well, is that something you sort of realize after the fact, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess in my head at the time, I feel like I have these good intentions. And, you know, it's all for the good of everything and everyone. And if they would just do it my way, it would be so much better. But I never would come out and say that to somebody, you know, I think it would be best if, or whatever. But instead, I would try to maneuver them into something. I mean, it's very strategic, and you know, there was a lot behind it, and that's something that I really have worked hard on, because it's really extremely unpleasant. And it never really, really works. Not
right.
With someone who's intimate with you.
Well, usually when we're using our fears as our form of motivation, the only thing it really does is protect us. I mean, it doesn't really give us any other result. It just keeps us from having the experience that we think we should be afraid of having. But ultimately, that's all it does. It doesn't give anything productive. It doesn't give anything, you know, the results that we're looking for as far as other people are concerned or our goals. But it does keep us from having it doesn't even really keep us from having the experience, actually. It kind of defeats itself a lot of times. But other examples of how it shows up sort of discreetly and creatively for you guys. Sandy?
Well, the first thing that kind of comes to mind is, you know, as you pointed out, I usually don't know about those insidious ones until long after it's over with. You know, when I really wanted to do something and my fear stopped me from doing it. And it's not until sometime later that I'll look back and I'll go, oh, man, That was just some more of that crap, and it tends mostly to be the arrogance that does that. Although sometimes it's the self-doubt as well. Overall, I think I'm a totally different person than I would have been without different features. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But the insidious, you know, like I know that one of the insidious things that happens is the personalizing of random events.
Oh yeah, and
you know,
that,
it's just always, oh, that's my luck. Well, of course it rained today. I had to go to a job interview.
Yeah,
like, you know, the whole planetary climate pattern is about me.
Sandy, you're so funny.
Yeah.
And little things like that, you know, I'll work myself into a depression over things like that, over things that are happening that didn't have a damn thing to do with me. And it's not until much later that I'm able to look back and go, oh, man, what the hell was I so afraid of?
And Matthew, you have any examples too?
Well, this really goes central to the whole Michael teachings, is that when I'm really in a T feature, I really don't feel I have a choice about things. And that's ultimately central to everything that comes to Michael, is, you know, everything is chosen. But when I'm in it, you know, it just seems, oh, I have to act a certain way. Oh, I have to react and protect myself or move on, you know, not be there and maybe get defensive to someone else or think I need to, you know, do something instead of just, you know, allowing what's there.
But that's really a really good point.
That really is.
Yeah,
you know,
really,
and I had thought something about that earlier myself, about that, you know, sometimes even when you can see it and you know it's your chief feature and you're trying to do something about it, you just can't not do it.
Yeah, that's such a great way of describing what the chief negative features do. They just put they were there originally for a reason. I think we all took these on for a reason when we truly felt threatened. And then we just didn't educate ourselves past that point. And now, basically, the effects are just a restriction of choices. And the sense of losing that ability to make a choice, because when I feel, for me, arrogance is not, it's self-deprecation that I have to work on in my personal relationships, because that's where I feel like I can't control myself. I don't have I feel like I almost don't have a choice in how I'm responding, and it takes a lot of effort to keep that sense of choice involved. You guys find that too?
Very much.
It's one of the things which, because I feel that obviously I'm not chief negative feature free, but I certainly have feel like I've made a lot of efforts, especially in my intimate relationships and the martyrdom. But it's you have to, or at least I do, I have to actually think about the situation and say, this is the type of situation where it would be so easy for me to fall into this. And I have to really just simply make the choice to take a minute. And taking that minute helps me refocus and not do some of the things that would come naturally, or at least they feel they come naturally to me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just that moment. And over the course of all of my working with Michael, they've mentioned a lot of it. Just being aware of it makes a difference. Being aware that it's going, that's where you are, even if you don't do anything different, the first step is being aware that you're in it, being aware that this is, you know, that you're coming from the place of chief negative feature. And once you become aware of it, that's when you can start making the decision and the choices to say, you know what, I don't have to do it this way. I can, even if it's embarrassing, because nobody likes that weird, uncomfortable, you know, but even if I just say, you know what, let me stop, I'm not going to do this,
The next question is giving an example of what you do to catch yourself in those scenarios, and whether it's obvious or a discrete chief negative feature, how do you guys catch yourself, and how do you get yourselves out of it? What do you do to change directions? And that was a good example. You just sort of regain consciousness and make a choice from there. But do you guys have more to elaborate on that?
Well, sometimes, I mean, I'm certainly... Sometimes it's like a snowball. You feel like you've already, or jumping out of a plane, you already started it, and there's no way to really go back. But there really always is, and I just try to remind myself of that in moments like now when I'm not, you know, living it. To say, you know what, it doesn't matter that it's embarrassing. It doesn't matter that someone might think you're stupid or this or that. I don't want to be this way anymore. I don't want to do this to my friends. I don't want to do this to me, you know, and just make a different choice. But it's the awareness, even if it's just for a brief moment, is, I think, the first step.
Yes, it is.
I have to agree with that, because I know for myself, if I recognize what I'm doing and I own it, I say it, whether out loud or just in my head, this is arrogance talking, this is self-dep acting, then very often I can stop and I can apologize and I can move forward in a different direction. Not always.
Yeah.
Sometimes
not always.
Even saying it, I just kind of think, oh, well, I still have to do it because it's what I have to do. But often I can stop and do things differently if I just own it aloud, even if aloud is in my head.
Right, exactly. And Matthew?
Usually I try to just bring a little something.
Oh, I want to, wait, before you say something, some of the people who are in the chat room are saying they can't hear you very well. So if you can talk louder into your phone, just because the more callers we have on, the less somebody gets.
All right, talk louder.
That's good. We'll see if that helps.
Okay.
Thanks for the feedback,
usually
guys.
So usually I try to do something different. I mean, awareness is, of course, extremely important, bringing consciousness. But awareness isn't something magical to just bring in and, oh, you're aware now. Oh, you're enlightened.
Right, exactly.
So sometimes, you know, if I'm really feeling impatient, I'll just stop doing something, you know, just take a break and not do anything. Or the other thing is just I can go to extremes and say, I know it's there, and I'm going to show my awareness that it's there and just be in a playful way, like maybe clownish, like really impatient, saying, hey, why isn't this done now? Like, I don't care if it takes 2 days. It should be done in 5 minutes.
Yeah. You sort of deflate the intensity.
Yeah, I'm just using it and sort of laughing at myself along with it. You know, I'm here now. I've got these fears. I've got these, you know, blocks in my perception and think I don't have a choice. So I'm just going to, you know, do something different, show to myself I do have a choice.
Well, that's kind of what I do with my arrogance. I say it's the best chief negative feature you could possibly have.
Jesus. Only an arrogant person would say that.
I didn't like that.
Well, it's true. So that moves on to the next question, is what chief negative features do you find the most difficult to interact with that you found in other people?
Arrogance.
It can't be. Can't be.
Actually, to be honest, I find self-depth and greed to be the most difficult, because when someone is, especially someone you care about, like you, if someone has self-depth, it is so painful to watch. It actually physically hurts me. Like, I mean, it's just so painful to watch someone you care about just tear themselves down. I mean, you know, you're harder on you than anyone else ever has been. You're your own worst enemy. You are, you know, when you have self-depth, it's just so insidious is not even intense enough word. It's just so harsh. And I'm sure everything's supposed to be how it's supposed to be, in the sense of, you know, we have all these chief negative features, but it just seems so mean.
I know. It's taken me a long time to realize that what I'm doing is the very thing I'm trying to protect myself from, which is abuse. Like, I'm mean to myself, taking place of, you know, parental figures that I've had in my life that were abusive, and I just took over. I just decided to take it on myself. It's taken me a long time to get that.
And you're very good at it.
Yeah, it's very, very, just very insidious.
I'm sorry.
I find for me the most difficult ones to be around are martyrdom and impatience. I would have to say they're close together, but martyrdom. And we're paired up. So that's really...
Isn't that nice? I don't like yours, you don't like mine.
Yeah. So those are difficult for me, because martyrdom always makes you... the thing that I hate the most about it, as far as my feeling being around it, is that you're always the villain in that person's life. In some way, you're always causing harm without even intending to, or always around a person who's complaining about stuff but not wanting to change anything. And those are totally superficial, like, you know, not all martyrdom shows up like that. But that's the part that I don't like to be around, is because I want to help people. I want to feel like something is being accomplished. And a lot of people that I've met in martyrdom, it's almost like they don't really want to be helped. There's a security in the victimization. And
that's true.
You're sort of forced to playing along, and I hate that feeling, because it goes back to feeling dishonest.
And that's true. You just force that, because if I'm the victim, there's going to be some sort of bad guy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
And Sandy or Matthew, want to weigh in on that?
Oh, well, the hardest one for me to deal with is stubbornness. People that just won't listen to the other point of view. You know, not necessarily to agree, but just even to hear it. People insist that things don't exist that do. And I have a real hard time with that.
And Matthew?
I find stubbornness as well, just because I'm someone with a lot of ideas. I like trying things that are new all the time, and I like feeling there's some sort of motion going on. So anytime there's someone who basically has his first reaction is, nope, I'm not going to do that, I've got to really sit with it for a long time before I'll not consider it threatening. I tend not to go... tends not to go well with my energy. And, of course, there isn't any better chief feature, but for me, I tend to notice more of a reaction with stubbornness.
Oh, and
no,
also...
Go ahead.
I did want to point out about greed. The reason, I guess, maybe I have an issue with it is because of having such controlling chief features. And when someone is in greed, not only are they totally anti anything you have to say in controlling, but you cannot satisfy that person. That where it's just overwhelming. Some people that we have known in the past that had greed as a chief negative feature, it takes over completely. It's a very, very overwhelming one to be around.
Interesting. And have you guys ever heard people complain about yours?
Oh, yeah.
A few seconds ago, actually.
Cypress and my take on each other. But have you guys had anybody complain about yours?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, especially the self-doubt. Again, I think people are much more aware of it. People are much more hurt by it. And as a result, you tend to hear more about it.
And Matthew?
Oh, of course not. I just get impatient with them when they start.
You keep them at bay, huh? Well, you guys, we have a few more questions that we didn't get to, but I want to, try to stay on the schedule. And this is we're going to move into your discussion with Michael. So I'm going to go into a trance and try to see if we can make this work. And hopefully it does. And you guys have some questions ready?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Well, look at there.
And then I'm going to remain in trance during that time, close to the opening the lines for callers to call in. And then Cypress is going to co-host and help, make sure everybody's welcome, because Michael's, through me at least, is a little bit dry and not quite the hostess that Cypress can be. So I'll just stick to the channeling, and Cypress is going to do the hosting. And you guys will remain on the line until the end if you'd like, and we'll say goodbye and wrap things up then, okay?
Okay.
All righty.
And also, I just want to give you a heads up that there are parts of the transition that will have pre-recorded voice of me, so that's not me being schizo going in and out of trance. That's so that I'm just explaining what's happening as part of the transition, okay?
Okay.
All right, so I'll be back after the break. I'm going to put you guys on hold, and the next few minutes are going to be spent with my getting into trance, so enjoy the music, and I'll let you know when I'm back. All right?
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hello to all of you.
Hello.
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Michael.
I spare with this as we come through, and we understand we'll be discussing the chief negative features from our system today with you, and we will open the floor to what you've described as your panel for discussion, and you can ask your questions as you wish. So you may begin.
Why don't you go ahead, Sandy?
Okay. What I wanted to ask about is my chief negative feature is arrogance. My secondary is self-doubt. I've been working really hard on these, and one of the things I have problems with is being able to tell when I am being self-confident versus when I am being arrogant. And I wondered if there was a simple test or some easy way that Michael could give me to help identify that.
Yes, for the most part, this can be easily differentiated in your sense of defensiveness in the moment. If you feel confident, you usually don't feel a need to defend yourself. When you are feeling arrogant, there's usually a sense of needing to defend yourself, to protect yourself from the other person's input, to separate yourself from that individual. Confidence is simply a presence. It's simply an awareness and a trust in your perceptions, your choices, your actions. But the arrogance is something quite different. It will put you on alert. It will be preparing for some sort of assault in some way against what you consider to be your confidence. Do you understand the difference?
No, not exactly. It seems to me that sometimes this is a little hard. What I'm thinking is that it seems almost arrogant. It sounds like, well, if I say something and someone else is giving the opposite way, if I'm confident, I'm just going to ignore what they say because I know I'm right. But that sounds arrogant, and so it seems like it would be more confident to try to explain my point of view, which would maybe sound defensive. I mean, just like right now, I feel like now that I'm being arrogant for not just accepting what Michael just said.
There is quite a big difference between having a conversation about a difference of opinion or a difference of perception and defending your position on a perception or a topic or an experience. Though this may not seem so obvious to you at this moment, as we explain to you that differentiation, if you pay attention during those moments, you may start to see the difference. In other words, this same conversation that you're having with us may or may not be arrogance. It is simply how you feel, how you're experiencing it, that determines whether it's actually arrogance or confidence. If you feel that you're having to explain yourself, if you feel that you are trying to defend yourself, if you feel put on guard, then it's arrogance. If you feel that you're just having a conversation with us and explaining your position, sharing your position, clarifying your position, that is quite different. It's not the words or the conversation that differentiates the chief negative feature from your confidence. It is the feelings, the experience for yourself behind what motivates you further into the conversation. Do you understand?
Yes. Thank you, Michael.
Matthew, do you have a question?
Yes. Now, we've talked about chief features and fear, but they're very related, but they are distinct. So I'm wondering if Michael can expand on the nature of fear and exactly how fear relates to the chief features, because fear isn't necessarily about, you know, arrogance. There's sort of an underlying fear, which, you know, is different in each case, and it's sort of lumped into, say, arrogance or impatience. But it's still very distinct from the form showing in the chief feature versus the actual fear itself.
If we are understanding your question correctly, the words that we use to describe the system of fear, the seven chief negative features, all can be reduced or distilled even further to context of issues revolving around being, issues revolving around having, issues revolving around control, and issues revolving around change. Those four particular areas are universal areas that all fragments experience while extant on the physical plane, yet cause of experiences or influences or imprinting or modeling as the fragment grows within the lifetime, it is thought that those very basic elements of life are things with which to protect the self from, even though they are very natural. So fear is, or could be more specifically defined as protection or defense, whereas chief negative features are simply describing the energies against which you are protecting yourself from or defending yourself from. Does this help to clarify?
Yes, it does.
Each pair of chief negative features, arrogance, self-deprecation, for instance, relates to issues of being. Being present in your world, being a part of your world, you'll notice that arrogance and self-deprecation revolve around issues about simply being. Impatience and martyrdom relate to issues of control. Your physical reality cannot be completely controlled by any extent beyond a very limited way. So it's very easy to develop a sense of needing to protect yourself from losing control of either time or space, as impatience and martyrdom describe. And greed and self-destruction have issues revolving around having or attaining within the life, and the value and the worth that is placed upon not only the self but the experiences. And, of course, stubbornness relates to change. So those are just the words that we've decided to attribute to energies that are natural in your world. And fear, of course, as you've suggested, is separate from that, in that fear is simply a range of a word to describe a range of defenses. And we've hoped that our system helps to differentiate exactly what it is from which you protect yourself so that you can make more conscious choices in those moments. We can elaborate further with your questions if there are more.
What, Matthew, do you have a follow-up?
I suppose I was really asking about the nature of fear. I mean, you said it's about defenses against what truly is there. On the other hand, you know, I guess I'm thinking a bit of A Course in Miracles when it says the opposite of love is fear, but that which is all-encompassing can have no opposite, because part of the Michael teachings is also just, you know, that we live in a tremendously loving universe. So I'm not sure if there's any comments on that.
Love, of course, embraces fear. Fear is not outside of that experience of love or outside of that energy that's described as love, but it does separate oneself from those experiences. And it is not that love, if you are in a loving place within your life, if you are choosing to exhibit and to gain more presence in your life through choices in love, this does not mean that you will not experience fear, because love embraces fear. Fear is the one who usually, or that particular energy, assumes that there is no love present, whereas love knows that fear can be present without love being diminished. Whereas while in a state of fear, it can be quite the opposite, that it is sensed that there is no love during the experience. In fact, one of the ways that we can suggest to our students to remedy issues of instances where fear has come forth is to, in that moment, not assume that there is no love present, that there is no wholeness present. Your fear is a part of you. It is not what defines you. And that would be our comment on that.
Well, I have a question. When we're discussing chief negative features, we were talking about ways to move out of the space of being in utilizing that chief negative feature. What would be your comment on the best way to move from that space? I don't know if it's individual per feature or if it's just a general.
Well, we've suggested this many times before, and there is many different ways with which one can try to move from a moment of fear that is inappropriate to a place of more conscious choice in the matter. And that is simply through awareness. In those moments, we've suggested what has come to be coined as photographing, which is simply a moment of self-awareness, a moment of catching yourself in the moment and observing your behavior that is being conducted from a place that assumes there is something from which to protect yourself. It's not that that awareness in that moment is going to free you from the experience, but it does at least bring a consciousness to the experience. And in the bringing of that consciousness to the experience, from there, you can make better choices or more appropriate choices in future experiences. Sometimes you can do a pivotal turn right in the middle of your fearful experience. But this usually comes after having a few experiences of just gaining consciousness in that moment. And that does take practice for most of you. It is not something that happens overnight, and it is not something that makes the go away. It simply makes them more of a tool for moments when you feel they are needed. But in those moments where you pull those tools out, you will be able to differentiate whether it's appropriate or whether it's not appropriate for the circumstance. So a universal tool in moving out of those chief negative features is simply awareness, self-observation. We can go into details about techniques and methods with which this can be done, and we realize this limited format does not allow for that, but we do have plenty of material out there which describes those different techniques. But they all go back to a simple moment of awareness.
Thank you. Sandy, Matthew, do either of you have a second question?
Not for me.
No, I don't.
Well, maybe we should just go right ahead to the callers then.
Okay, then.
Hey, this is Troy. I'm still in a trance, but I pre-recorded this so I could let you know you're listening to Troy and Michael Speak live. And Cypress is going to take your calls now and direct your questions to Michael, 646-652-4762. The number again is 646-652-4762. Have a great time.
We can take the first caller.
Hello? Is anyone there? I'm not sure how I'm going to know if someone's there.
Can you hear me?
Oh, hello, yes. Hi, it's Ann.
No, I just wanted to make sure. I have to think of a question, so if somebody wants to go ahead of me, I'm still formulating it, but I just wanted to make sure that it worked. So,
I think we only have one. I'm not sure how the lines work. I don't know if we could put you back on hold and get you back again. I'm not sure that happened.
Oh, okay. So I'm number one in line. Is that
you
how
are?
It is?
So go right
oh
on
my God.
Ahead and
oh my God.
Wing it.
We have the chief negative feature and then sort of the secondary negative feature. And I still have trouble understanding. I understand that the chief negative feature works very clearly through the attitude. Perhaps can Michael talk a little bit about how the chief negative feature really affects the attitude? For example, if you're an idealist or a realist or a pragmatist, because I that seems to be one way that it affects the goal, but it also affects the attitude, does it not? And I'm still not quite clear how that works.
We will explain. The notion that the chief negative feature affects the attitude is a rather incorrect notion. It is more that all of the chief negative features are tied to the attitude, or rather the attitude is tied to all of the chief negative features, whether it's primary, secondary, or tertiary. The primary affects your goal in the system that we've described as your essence and personality overleaves. The secondary affects your mode from our system, and the tertiary affects your centering. It is related to your centering. However, one of the ways that you actually pull up your chief negative feature is when you go into the negative pole of the attitude. So it's not so much that the chief negative feature causes this cascading effect throughout your personality, but more that once the attitude has slipped, once the overleaf that we describe as the attitude, your philosophical stance in life, starts to slip into the negative pole, that is when you pull in the chief negative feature to protect you. And this is because the attitude is your basic interpretation of the world. And once you've gone into a place where you've interpreted it in a negative place, you usually pull in the chief negative feature. Depending on which one you pull in, then ties to the area of your personality that is it affects. So if you are in idealism, for instance, and you fall into naivete, you may pull up your primary if it's naivete about your goals in life. You may pull in your secondary if it's naivete in your relationships. If it has to do with your physical presence, your body, a lot of times you will pull in then the tertiary. And so we hope this explains a little bit more clearly how the attitude has come to be associated with the chief negative features, but it is more of a key in what ignites the chief negative features, and it is also the core or the key in freeing oneself from the chief negative feature. Because once one can move back to the positive pole of the attitude, this usually means releasing oneself from the need for protection, because you are now back seeing things from a clearer perspective. Does this clarify for you?
Yes, it does. That helps a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Next caller, please.
It appears we don't have other callers at this moment, so we can continue in a conversation with you, or we can close the connection down.
Well, we certainly can continue in a conversation with me. Do you want to put the other panel people back on?
They're still here.
Oh, they are. Oh, I wasn't exactly positive how that worked. Does anyone else have any other questions or comments that they have thought of?
You know, I was just really fascinated by that interchange. I didn't realize that about the attitude, and it just really set my head to spinning. That makes so much sense. I'm an idealist, and when I get into the negative pole of that, it makes perfect sense that that's when that that's when those features would pop up to protect me.
That's when everything goes awry.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had never thought of that before, and that was just such a great answer, and I am so appreciative for that, Michael. I do have another question about self-doubt, though. Is there when my self-doubt is in the taking the front stage instead of staying quietly in the background, I find that I have a real tendency sometimes to even move from that into self-destruction as well. And I wondered if you could tell me if that's kind of typical and if there are any key ways to avoid having that happen.
Your observation is that you trade one chief negative feature that you consider to be a habit for another that is more severe?
Yeah.
Yes, this is not uncommon. This may be part of what we are also elaborating here on the being the tertiary chief negative feature. There's not much talk through our channels or from us about the tertiary because there is so much work to be done on the primary and secondary, let alone bringing in a third one. But it is true that all fragments will draw from all of the basic fears that we've described or the basic chief negative features that we've described. And it is not unusual for a fragment to either jump to a completely different chief negative feature that is very specific to a situation, or even take on for a period of time a chief negative feature to explore because of a specific relationship that may have come into the life or because of a new approach to life during a period of time. There is only the same method and techniques that we've talked about before in keeping one from going what you might consider to be into a darker or more severe chief negative feature, and that is simply, again, through awareness. It is only truly through that stance that one can free oneself from the effects of it, no matter how severe or darker the energy may feel. It is only through that awareness.
Is there any truth to my sense that when I feel like I'm really making progress on my chief negative feature, that that's when my secondary gets the strongest?
All of you will come up with your own creative ways of keeping yourself challenged in terms of your fears, your chief negative features. And while one has been focused on and accomplishment has been made in terms of bringing awareness and consciousness and capability for transforming it and educating it, usually this means that one of the others has not been as focused upon or not as obvious, and it is not that it gets stronger, it's simply that you become more aware of it.
Ah.
Yeah, it's not like it gets away from you, probably.
The light bulb is flashing.
I also have another something I'd like you to comment on. Troy and I had been discussing the chief negative feature that applies to your body. I believe there's... And I'm not positive. I have a very teeny vague amount of information in my head, so... if you will just comment, is there one that, because we were talking about that, how like our body either takes on or we have one that associates towards our body, to our physical body, and how that reacts with relationships. Was that correct?
Yes, that's what we were describing as the tertiary.
Oh.
Your physical presence is usually has its own basic fear, and this is because there is what could be described as emotional fears, there are intellectual fears, there are physical fears. These are parts of layers or dimensions of your bodies with which you have while incarnated, and these particular bodies tend to develop needs for protection, or what you deem is a need for protection. These, as we've described, tend to fall into those three descriptions, the primary, the secondary, and the tertiary. The tertiary is what you are speaking of.
Yeah, I thought it was very obvious when we were discussing it in the past. I mean, when you think about your body and how you react with other people and your intimate relationships that, you know, your body's involved in, what it was so glaringly obvious what chief negative feature would go with that. I mean, with just a brief moment of thought on it, I was like, oh, I immediately knew that it was arrogance, you know, because I keep, you know, I don't want anybody to look too close, you know. And it was interesting. Troy's is, like, he has arrogance, and his, for his body, I believe, was in martyrdom, which, so we're like sharing our chief negative features all around. Have you thought about that at all, Sandy or Matthew, what yours might be for your physical body?
I'm sure it's self-destruction. And I wonder if Michael would confirm that.
We would agree.
Matthew?
I haven't really thought about it. That's the first time I've heard of a tertiary, so if Michael wants to say what it is, that's great.
We tend to encourage especially our advanced or more studied students to observe this on their own, and we can help validate that, but we usually don't have a necessity for handing out the titles for these areas. And we also want to point out that these areas are not always so definitive for everybody. Some of them cross over, and some of them are triggers for other areas. For instance, if the secondary is ignited, it may then ignite the tertiary, which then ignites the primary. They can all be connected and blurred together for you while you are experiencing it. But if you think about what it is that you feel in terms of being naked, or feel in terms of being intimate physically, or in terms of your material relationship to your world, this can often give you clues as to what the tertiary is.
With that tidbit, would you like to take a stab at it, Matthew?
I don't have a firm grasp. My first guess would be arrogance, but I don't know. I'll think about it.
Okay. Well, I'm sure there'll be another week when we can talk about it. Does anyone else have any other questions that we'd like to ask on the topic? I thought the tertiary one was very interesting based on the fact that it had more to do with your physical body. And it's something I had not heard of in the past either. And so when I heard about it, I was like, oh, my gosh, I would have never thought of that.
No, I don't think I would have thought of it either. But it was one of those things that just rang true instantly on hearing it. It really felt...
I agree.
You know, really, like, it felt almost like a duh kind of.
Yeah, it was very validating for me as well. I mean, just thinking about, because having martyrdom and impatience is so amazingly different, and arrogance is something that I really never felt connected to those. I mean, even though I know we use all the chief negative features at some point for whatever situations and everything, but I felt very disconnected from that particularly. And then as soon as we were having a discussion about it, immediately clicked in, you know, you want to present something, you want it to always be a certain way, you want it to be shown in a certain way, you don't want people to look too close. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, well, and Michael, do you have any final comments?
We'll just add here that the system that you recognize as a core of our teaching is really only a part of all that we have to share. And as time goes by and clarity sets in through more channels, these kinds of pieces of information will continue to be elaborated upon, so that once a foundation is understood, then we can build on that with our students. And so without having had all of your studies involving the rest of the overleaves, the tertiary may not have made as much sense. And we do tend to provide the information in a moment, or seek those moments where the fragment will then suddenly know, through a process of internal validation at least, that this is valid. This makes sense. And
well,
it is your core understanding of the foundation of what we've already shared that allows this before we move into other material.
Well, thank you. And I say good work to all of us.
We will conclude here and say goodbye.
Goodbye, Michael, and thank you.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Welcome back.
Welcome back, Troy.
That music is hysterical. I totally started cracking up when I heard it.
I wanted something that would be short and sweet.
I loved it.
You guys, thank you. That was very nerve-wracking, and I did the best I could.
Well, it was the first of many, Alex Hope.
And there were a lot of, both lines were completely full for the longest time, and I think everybody completely misunderstood what was supposed to happen, because there were notes in the chat room that they're not listening to me. They can't hear me. And they didn't realize they were.
On hold.
Yeah, on hold. Oh, it looks like Matthew signed out. Well, bye, Matthew.
Bye, Matthew.
Matthew.
Thank you for your participation, Matthew.
Yes, thank you very much. I wanted to be able to say goodbye to you, but you're already gone. And so how did you guys think our first show went?
I think it went really well for our first show, and it'll only get better and better.
I think the same thing. It was a joy to be part of, and I think it, you know, like Cypress said, it can only get better as everybody gets less nervous and as people understand more of what's going on, and so we have more callers.
Yeah, and when we get the hang of, I was really nervous that it was time to take a call. I was like, how am I going to know?
Well, when we come back from the from the segue into that. There should be a caller. If not, then
I guess
Michael would let you know.
Yeah, they did. There are no more. But Anne had a great question. That was really wonderful. I'm glad that she was there.
Yes. I never heard who it was. I kept wanting to say, who is this?
Oh, thank you, Anne, for calling. I appreciate that. And also winging it because you were...
Do we know which Anne it was?
Anne H.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't want to give anybody's last names, but...
No, that's good. That's
Anne.
I was thinking maybe next time we should have them introduce the way we do. Maybe they can say their...
I sent that in an email saying for everybody to introduce themselves.
I think we were thrown off with the not being ready.
Yeah. We're all new at this, so that's
fine.
Yeah,
it was our first time.
And, and also then we can prompt them to do that, too, because we don't know who's going to call. We don't know if it's going to be regulars we know or people we've never heard of.
And even if they're regulars that we know, maybe somebody listening doesn't know.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Never know. And also in that segue to going into trance, something went awry. It cut out.
I noticed.
And couldn't do much about it, so we winged it from there.
Yeah, I was like, I thought he was going to talk.
So I'll edit that out. I'll fix that in the final piece that goes out. But anyway, thank you guys, and we'll end with a little bit of music here, and we'll say goodbye now. But I think we learned a little bit today, and not only how to run the show, but also about the topic, and I hope other people did too. And if anybody's listening who doesn't know much about the Michael teachings, a lot of this terminology might seem foreign to you, but just jump over to truthloveenergy.com and click on the basic intro, and you can find all those. The introduction explains all of it, so that can help a lot, because the show doesn't give us time to really go into all those details, but a lot of people who call in are going to already have that terminology under their belt, so they're going to use it.
Right? Well, I think that was very successful. Thank you, Troy, for thinking of this. I think it was a really wonderful idea. Adds some personality and
present.
Joy.
Well, I love that we're actually able to do this, because we're not just text being shared in the community, but we're actually voices that can be heard now.
I agree. I think that's wonderful. And I think, you know, a lot of people, that'll be the only chance they'll ever have to hear Michael's voice.
You know, one of the things I also thought was interesting is that nobody told Sandy and I to talk louder.
Never nobody's ever said that to me in my life.
In the chat room, they said they could hear you guys fine. They had trouble hearing me, and they heard had trouble hearing Matthew.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Oh, there's Matthew. He typed in saying, oh, sorry, I thought it was over. Oh, that's okay, Matthew. Next time we'll know. We're all new at this, like I said.
That's right.
Well, I'm very excited and very happy. And the next show, I think, is...
23rd?
The 23rd. I know that's Christmas weekend. By the way, Geraldine in the chat room says that Sandy did great.
Yeah, tell her thank you.
Well, you can tell her. She's listening.
Oh, thank you, Geraldine.
It is the 23rd, and even though that's Christmas weekend, that's Sunday over Christmas.
That just makes it more festive.
That's the day after I turn 60.
Woohoo, Sandy.
I wondered when I knew your birthday was coming up.
So you'll have a 60-year-old on your panel.
Excellent. And then next month we'll have I'll be 40, so there'll be a 40 and 6 year. We're gonna have every generation covered it by the end of this.
Yeah.
But now we just need to find a young one.
Well, I'm gonna wrap things up here, and like I said, go to truthloveenergy.com and check it out, and come on to the next show and join in and give us a call.
Goodbye till next time.
Bye, everybody.
Yeah, and don't forget. Fear is a friend. It's just what you got to teach it better, what's scary and what's not.
And be thorough.
That's really profound.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
I like you better when I'm gone.